Well, it's been yet another long week. We have talked about pot liquor, PTSD, comic books, and a whole lot more. So as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
I'm looking for a pirate, Captain Jack Sparrow.
Well, today is your lucky day, because I just happen to be Captain Jack Sparrow.
This dude is suing this woman for texting during their first date.
Students owe more than $3,000 in lunch debt. It goes on to say that students won't be placed on next year's class roster and won't get report cards if they don't pay.
Harsh. We are joined in the break room today by Ed Sohn. He is a vice president with the media company Thomson Reuters. Also with us is Fayette County Commissioner Steve Brown, Savannah Magazine editor Amy Condon, and Amber Scott of the nonprofit Leap Year. Happy Friday, everybody.
Morning.
Happy Friday.
Morning.
So the week is almost over. Let's see. How about a movie? Cue jingle.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
There's an Au Courant reference. According to Film LA's annual study, Georgia surpassed California last year as the top international location for feature film production. 17 of the 100 top-grossing movies were shot in Georgia. Again, more than any other jurisdiction anywhere in the world. So I suppose one of the questions this poses is this, does this mean that the multi-million dollar state tax giveaway to the film industry that Georgia has been doing that attracted all this attention, can we officially now say that it's worth it? What do you think, Ed?
You know, I think it's absolutely worth it. I think that, you know, it's brought a ton of commerce to our state. I live in Atlanta, and obviously disproportionately in Atlanta, we see a ton of production studios opening up. But I will say this also. I've observed it, like, in local commerce. I live in Grant Park. I was at a local restaurant, and they said, we get lunch orders in from these production studios, and it's great business. I know exactly how to serve them, and it's not something that they were doing before. I saw a house. They were like, this entire house is now rented to production studios. It's great for local commerce. You can see the effects. They're really palpable.
Anecdotal accounts, however. I mean, if we look at the available empirical research on whether or not Georgia is getting its bang for the buck, there's some disputes about that. Steve Brown, what do you think? Is it worth it to give away all of this state tax money to have some film productions in the state? Is it just about money?
Well, I can tell you, as the jurisdiction that has the largest movie studio in the state of Georgia and eventually will be the largest one in the United States, it's well worth it.
For your county?
Yeah. Well, if I give you a dollar if you give me a dollar and I give you 30 cents back, I've still got 70 cents. And I think that's what we're doing, essentially. We're giving them some of the money back for production costs. But again, I think to Ed's point, you look at the collateral business opportunities there with the accountants, the restaurants, the hotels, anybody that's generating sales tax and property taxes across the state, that is huge. You take a Marvel movie, for example, which we film all of those now in Fayette County, that's an $80 to $150 million film. If they just spend half of that in the state of Georgia, that's huge. And if you don't have the tax credit, you don't have any of those opportunities. They all go away.
Amber Scott, do you buy it?
I do. And I think, you know, there's also something intangible about having Atlanta represented across the country on the screen and mm-hmm. having us kind of that pride and sense of wonder about Atlanta. And I've seen a lot of folks talk about coming to move here and like coming to visit specifically because they saw Ride Along or they saw whatever, you know, that was filmed here. So I think there's also some things that are a little bit harder to have the A to B in terms of a ROI on.
On the other hand, I imagine part of the reason that film productions want to come here is that this is not a state with particularly strong organized labor, and we have some cheap productions happening here that are kind of doing things on the fly. This resulted in the death of a production worker on a really cheaply run set in your neck of the woods, Amy and Savannah.
That was a company, an independent film company that came here, and that was tragic. But we also have in Savannah had Baywatch and some other films. One of the things that I know, isn't that
also
interesting?
Tragic.
Yes. No comment. But one of the things that we've seen is people are willing to make their homes here that used to leave and go all over the country to work on productions. Now they're buying houses. They're living in Savannah in ways that they and contributing to the life of Savannah. Because, you know, we have an art school here that creates a lot of talent for the film industry. And they were all moving away. Now they're staying. And so I think that's a one, because that gives a new life to this area of the film industry here as well. And I'm not taking away anyway to the tragedy that happened on the Allman film.
Which is something I shouldn't have made a joke about just then, and I apologize for that.
No, it was, heartbreaking, but it also catalyzed the industry here to get really focused on what kind of films they want, what kind of safety measures they want, and to be a real strong, coordinated voice, which has helped bring more films to Savannah.
And Adam, I can tell you that most of the large motion pictures, with the big reputable firms, they are union shops. So they are employing union employees.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll see if the good times continue to roll in the film industry here in Georgia, or if eventually it'll pick up like a swarm of locusts and go to the next state willing to give everybody a tax cut. Let's talk about dates. A movie can make a great first date or a miserable last one.
I see you in here a lot, and I think that you're really pretty, and would you want to go out with me ever?
Please go away.
So get this. A man in Texas is suing his date. She texted all the way through the movie they went to, and he wants his $17 back. So many questions here. Is this just more male entitlement, or was she rude? Should she pay him back for the tickets? Does this really need to become a court case, Amber?
So I love this. I think this was my favorite story of the week. And I love the framing around male entitlement or male fragility. First of all, I think it needs to be said that just because you go on a date with somebody does not mean you're entitled to any specific set of behavior. So
true.
While I think that it's super rude that she was sitting there texting, she wasn't, there's no, you know, contract about how she was supposed to behave just because he offered to pay $17. And so I think that that entitlement around what men should be expecting on a date is really problematic. And I love that it's been called out with this male entitlement. And I also want to say this is probably the awards for like most petty in the U.S. Yeah. Like the level of like pettiness and litigiousness to even think about suing somebody over this is kind of ridiculous.
Ed Sohn, you're a lawyer, right? In the minute we have before the break, do you think this fella has a case?
He does not have a case. I agree that a date's not a contract. You can't really sue. I don't think it's an example of male entitlement because I think it's just a matter of ridiculousness. I think, you know, if she had somehow brought a
ridiculousness,
lawsuit, you know, if she had paid for the ticket, she couldn't sue either. Now, whether the institution or cultural norm of like men having to pay for women, whether that's an anachronism, that's a kind of a different question. But, you know, there's no legal theory here.
It's like hashtag frivolous lawsuit.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, there are some examples where you have a wedding that's being planned and there's an, you know, you can't refund the wedding and the honeymoon and
the ring.
Yeah. And then so, you know, those are major expenses. And I can say, hey, maybe you divvy up the proceeds there and figure out where you're going to go with that in terms of paying those expenses. But this is ridiculous.
The theater also
this fellow does have a remedy available
to
him. This fellow does have an extra judicial remedy available to him, which is don't go out another date with her. But we are doing coffee and conversation with the break room here on Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Tedley. Guests today are Ed Sohn. He's an executive with Thomson Reuters. Also with us, Fayette County Commissioner Steve Brown, Savannah Magazine editor Emily Condon, and Amber Scott of the nonprofit Leap Year. Let's talk about the latest innovation in the fight to make air travel a little bit more tolerable. You know, you figure maybe the seats are cramped, the snacks come in those very small packages, but how about some music? Not on those little overpriced earbuds, but live music. An Atlanta band named Pony League recently performed a short concert during a Southwest Airlines flight. Let's listen.
It was a 19-mile marker dance, and you didn't seem to want to give a second glance. Is it you, or is it me, or is it the champagne in this banged-up limousine? I don't know.
So apparently the Southwest passengers seem to enjoy it. Amy, live music on an airplane, would that make the time go faster for you, or would that just be super irritating?
I love it, actually. I grew up on Southwest Airlines because I grew up in Texas. So I've had them where they do comedy shows and improv shows on them. So, and I am a nervous flyer, so anything that can take my mind off of it, that'd be great.
Okay, so Amy's in favor. Any dissenting views
totally
on the panel?
Yeah. Oh, so I just think this is terrible. I can't imagine. You're already stuffed like sardines, and you just want to, like, get to where you're going, and then this band comes on. Like, we all have, you know, iPhones. We have our own music. And if they're going to pay to have a band, I'd rather they just pay for free meals and snacks again.
I mean,
instead of peanuts.
Right.
I love live music, so I'm in favor. But here's the only issue that I take with this. When you get on an airplane, you schedule your flight based on your schedule, so you don't get to opt out of the music, right? Like a mariachi band steps on the train in the subway, you can just go to a different car, right? Like right. If someone is doing like an
you're
open air concert,
there.
Yeah, but like on an airplane, like you don't get to say like, well, right. Oh, this one's playing the band I like. Okay, I'll take that
There's
flight.
No
like,
opting out.
You don't get to opt out because you can't just walk out of the plane,
you
right?
To, so through the Swedish stuff,
suffer through it.
And I kept watching the video, and I kept waiting for somebody to be hauled out of the plane screaming, saying they weren't going to give up their seat for the drum set. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Because those drum sets take up a lot of space. That's probably two seats, you know.
Right.
All right. Something else here. Most of us, especially in the media business, spend a lot of time on the social medias these days. But you may want to limit your exposure to one of these sites in particular. A recent study shows us that Instagram is the worst social media platform in terms of its effect on young people's mental health. And YouTube is the most positive, has the best effect on young people's mental health. These are both image-based social platforms. Any theories as to why Instagram might wear on people's mental health? Anybody?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And that's why I tend to stay off of Instagram, because if you ever watch somebody try to take a picture for Instagram, it takes like 15 minutes. Like, it's so choreographed. It's really, really staged. And they're making sure that they don't have a double chin and the food looks amazing. And we all have these fabulous lives. And it's really so plastic, you know, and there's not a lot of authenticity there because everyone looks so perfect.
It's Vogue for the internet as well.
Right, yeah. Right.
And it's so, hyper curated to create an atmosphere of something.
Yes.
Like sort of social status that you may not even actually exist in.
Exactly.
And,
like we all have
these
fabulous...
And it gives you the feeling that everyone else is leading their best life all the time and you're
and
just
you're
a schmo
in your
underpants, right?
Well, so my... you know, the pushback I'd have on that is that YouTube is also self-selected. I mean, they, you know, they do, like, re-record their videos. It is sort of their best self. These YouTubers have, like, lights and softening tools and whatnot. Not as much as Instagram. I think that the issue with Instagram is just that it's more, you have these self-selected still images that are ephemeral, right? They kind of like, they're just snapshots in time and then they move on. And you have this feed that really mixes them all together, whereas YouTube demands at least a little bit of attention, right? You don't have, you know, split-second videos, you know, hitting you rapid fire of all the friends that you have one after another. I think that's going to take a drain on you. And it's also, you know, it's because YouTube will tend to be less of the people that you know directly. People will research topics on YouTube. Right. And so it's going to be more edifying from like a like an academic perspective rather than just this bombardment of like all these people, you know, an image a second coming through your brain.
You can point out. YouTube is more story oriented. So story is engages you differently than something that's like this massive yearbook of popularity.
And more cat videos. Anything with cat videos, you know, that's what brings world
there
peace
you go.
Is cat.
Mental health right there.
Well, speaking of things that the kids are doing with their phones, a lot of schools prohibit using phones during class. Some students do it anyway. Brawling, needless to say, is also against the rules at schools, but teachers don't always follow the rules either. Two Stone Mountain Middle School teachers got into a physical fight, an actual fight, in front of class this week, and it was captured on video by what? A student using a phone, and then it went viral. Let's watch. Now, according to CBS 46, both of those teachers were arrested and charged with disorderly conduct. The DeKalb County School District says the teachers' actions were patently unacceptable. They've been removed from the school. right way to handle this? What else can you do, Amber?
Yeah, I mean, I think that making sure that this is shown that this is unacceptable is really important, because this was so ridiculous and unprofessional, and the focus on these personal issues, you know, versus what the focus should be, which is on making sure that these students are prepared for college and career, and kind of bringing that foolishness to a classroom and setting that example is just so terrible. And they need to just learn how to be passive aggressive in the hallway like everybody
That's
else.
Right, exactly.
Call your friends during your lunch break.
This is where it would have been effective to say, use your words.
Right.
Use your words.
And what does it say about society when the students are breaking up the fights of the teachers? I mean, you know, we've gone 180 degrees here.
That said, guys, it has been argued quite a lot over the last 24 hours or so following the body slamming of a reporter by a Montana politician that maybe our society has gotten a little hypersensitive about a little minor violence between adults, and that it shouldn't necessarily be a disqualifying offense to get into a little bit of fisticuffs. Anybody want to make that argument?
I'm blaming it on Instagram personally.
Poor mental health. You know, I think there's something that feels askew to me. Just maybe it's perception. Maybe it's the way media has been framing it. Maybe it's because we have a society where everyone lives in living color and in public because of everyone's got a camera on their phone. But something feels off about increased incidences of teachers in schools misbehaving in some way or another. You see, you know, recently at a school, how many faculty were found, maybe having done some misconduct sexually and whatnot. I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff happening in schools, and I don't know if we're just shining a light on it or there's some dysfunction happening. I've got friends who are teachers. I believe very much in teachers in schools, but it feels like something's just kind of shifted in our society.
Well, society,
not an easy job, and it's been getting harder.
And everybody has a cell phone, so now everybody is a reporter. Yeah, so there is nothing that happens in the world today that does not end up on a video. I mean, it's you can do it in seconds, and in some ways that's really good. With the police force, you know, when the gentleman got shot in the back in South Carolina, had you not had that video, would the police officer have been convicted? I don't know, but you know, some of these things end up possibly having some positive potential, but a lot of them, you know, you get a lot of rants and a lot of nasty behavior, and people, instead of trying to break it up, they're sitting there with their phone taping it, and that's really sad. And I applaud the kids in Stone Mountain for actually trying to break fight up. Yeah.
Indeed. If you're just joining us, it's On Second Thought. We're hanging out in the break room talking about the week's news with Ed Sohn and Steve Brown, Emily Condon, and Amber Scott. Speaking of school controversy up in North Georgia, Chattanooga Valley Elementary's principal sent a letter to parents saying that the school would deny class placement and meals and withhold report cards if overdue lunch fines remain unpaid. Students without debt would be rewarded with a free ice pop on field day.
Wow.
Dolly Martin took action. Lord. She is raising funds to cover students' lunch debt. Martin spoke with WTVC News Channel 9.
I think it shames the children. I think that it segregates them from their peers. If one kid gets an icy and the next kid can't because his parents can't afford to pay lunch money, like, how do you explain that to a 5, 6, 7-year-old? They don't understand that concept.
Now, the school district superintendent talked to News Channel 9 and sort of walked the whole thing back, said that the school principal was wrong. No students are going to be denied placement or report cards or meals. But the question is out there now before us, which is that, it seems cruel to punish a kid for not having their lunch money. But on the other hand, like, you got to have that lunch money, and there's got to be some consequence for not paying for a service or good that is provided to you. Right, Amy?
I don't know. I'm not okay with shaming poor people. I don't know why that became something we do. I'm willing to pay more in taxes or whatever I need to do so that no child goes hungry, because that's speaking to a deeper issue. If they don't have lunch money, that may be the only meal they're getting, and that may be the only hot meal that they get every day. And if we're not more concerned about that and their ability to participate in class because they're worried about eating or they're starving or, they're anxious because they're going to be shamed, that speaks to a deeper issue that's beyond economics, and I'm willing to do whatever I can and pay in taxes whatever I can, even though I have no kids in the school system now, so that no child goes hungry under our watch. That should be the goal, not shaming poor people,
but let me
especially children.
Let me tell you what's going through my government mind when I read all that. Why aren't those kids on the USDA free lunch program?
Precisely.
Because it is so incredibly easy to get on that program if you qualify. Is the school not registering these kids for the free lunch program? I mean, we have it in Fayette County. We have it in every county in the state of Georgia. And I don't know why any child is not on that program and they're having to do work for to pay for their lunches. I mean, is it negligent parents who they have the money and maybe they're above the income level for the thing and the kids are doing something else with the lunch money? I don't know. But if it's a genuine instance where they are impoverished and cannot afford to pay for those meals, they should be on that federal program.
Well, but regardless, that's not the child's fault. So it's the child who is
exactly.
suffering, and it's the child who studies have shown if you are in class hungry, you're not going to be able to focus. And so why is it that we're expecting children to earn the right
to
be well-fed and nourished
but
while
let's just
they're
say,
learning.
Let's just say for the sake of conversation that you've got a family that does not qualify for the federal school lunch program. Maybe they've got the biggest McMansion on the block and they're just not paying for lunches because they don't want to. What stick does the school have in order to at its disposal in order to enforce the necessity of having that good paid for, if not to withhold some service from the student?
I think that that's, you know, the situation that you're painting out is certainly one where there's the possibility for system abuse, but you don't design a system for, you know, potential abusers. You assign it for the beneficiaries
exactly.
of it. And so I think, you know, look, the issue really is, and you kind of keep bringing this up and it's right, you know, there should be some sense of accountability that's taught, and that's right. But lunch is not the one, right? That's not the one place to make the example. When a kid, you know, smashes a beaker in the chemistry lab or, you know, vandalizes a school or does something else. And certainly, you know, accountability measures like sweat equity, like that's cool. I think that there might be a place for that, especially in, you know, certain schools and certain cultures. Like that totally might make a lot of sense. Lunch is just not the place to do it.
Exactly.
All right, let's try to get in one more quick topic here. There's been a plan on the books in Georgia for a while to put some dedicated truck lanes on I-75 south of Atlanta. And this has recently been named one of the nation's biggest highway boondoggles by an independent bit of research. The state insists that the lanes are needed, but this research group says that the state is spending billions on a project that may be totally unnecessary and ineffective. Anybody drive on I-75 south of Atlanta think trucks need their own lane?
I do. Those things are terrifying. and I really do feel like they need their own lane just so that the rest of us can drive and feel like we're not about to get hit by a Mack truck. But they really are hard to dodge, and they're usually the drivers are running on like 3 hours of sleep, so it's incredibly dangerous.
Anybody have one quick dissenting view?
Well, I'll tell you this. The DOT is ignoring autonomous vehicle technology. And go look up a company called Otto, O-T-T-O, Google that, and that is the autonomous freight industry, and it's going to sweep it. You won't have these people driving during the day. The vehicles will be driving at night, and there won't be any drowsiness. They'll be driving in the lanes.
Yeah, my only pushback on the whole idea is $2 billion. That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money.
In the 1 minute that we have left, let's go to our lightning round. If you're a fan of sequels, there are plenty of options in theaters right now with follow-ups to Guardians of the Galaxy, to Alien, and opening today, follow-up to Pirates of the Caribbean.
I'm looking for a pirate, Captain Jack Sparrow.
Well, today is your lucky day, because I just happen to be Captain Jack Sparrow.
Turns out there are even more sequels on the way, with movie sequels to oldies like Blade Runner and Star Wars and Top Gun. So, guys, if you could make a sequel to any film at all, what would it be and what would you call it, Ed?
You know, I racked my brain for this one. The only thing I could think of was The Shawshank Redemption.
Really?
Yeah, and it's just because I love the characters. The actors are still active. I think there's more plot line there. But really, the only title I could come up with was The Shawshank Redemption.
Nice. I like it. Steve, what's your sequel?
Well, you know, I'm thinking like Rocky 56, where they actually bury Sylvester Stallone. You know, and that's, you need to finish it. You know, you need closure on that one. So I think that would be the way to go.
Amy Condon in Savannah.
I'd like to see the 30th anniversary celebration of When Harry Met Sally, and it'd be called On the Side.
That's actually nice. Like, that's a thing you could sell.
Because isn't next year like the 30th anniversary of it? But it won't mean as much. It's a fantasy because Nora Ephron's gone, Carrie Fisher's gone, and Bruno Kirby's gone, and they are essential to it. But so it's my fantasy film.
All right, not bad. Amber Scott, what is your must-have sequel?
I think I would do Passenger 57 versus United Airlines.
Nice.
Wow. A head-to-head.
Alien versus Predator.
Right. We'll see if
can
Wesley
we get snakes
Snipes
on a plane in there
it.
Somewhere?
Oh, snakes on a plane. There
with
you go.
Snakes.
With snakes.
With snakes.
All right. Well done, guys. That is it for today's show. Let me thank my break room guests. We had Ed Sohn of Thomson Reuters, also with us, Fayette County Commissioner Steve Brown, Savannah Magazine editor Amy Condon, and Amber Scott of the nonprofit Leap Year. Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks,
you too.
All.
Thanks so much.
That's it for today's show. We want to hear from you. What movie sequel would you want to see made? Reach us at facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio or tweet us at OSTTalk. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.